This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Few actors are as deeply associated with a character as Davis Gaines is with The Phantom of the Opera. When the Kennedy Center honored Hal Prince, Phantom's original director, they turned to Gaines to perform the musical's signature song, Music of the Night.
Let your mind start a journey through a strange new world. Before thoughts of the life you knew before, let your soul take you where you long to.
That spine-tingling vibrato shook the risers more than 2,000 times in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and eventually Broadway, where Phantom remains the longest-running show in history. But Davis Gaines isn't just that legendary voice. He's an actor, first and foremost, with 14 Broadway and off-Broadway credits to his name. That's something he hoped for, but had trouble picturing growing up. He was a theater obsessive in a place that didn't have much of an outlet for kids like him.
I wanted to be an actor since my earliest recollection, growing up in Orlando.
Pre-Disney Orlando.
Yeah, pre-Disney.
Describe pre-Disney Orlando.
Lots of orange groves and no traffic.
Sleepy little town.
Sleepy town. I grew up there knowing I wanted to be an actor, but not knowing how. But I found a children's theater group. I joined early on, and then I had an amazing junior high school drama teacher, Ann Derflinger. And she just took me under her wing, and I just couldn't stop after that. And I was cast in musicals then because I had a loud voice. But
did you model your singing after someone?
No, well, interesting. I was a really introverted, quiet, painfully shy kid. And that's why I think I tapped into that Phantom role so much, that I understood his pain and his loneliness and his...
I get it.
All that. And so I had grew up in my room mostly by myself with my record player, listening to cast recordings, listening to John Raitt and all those people. And it somehow sunk in. I guess I just sung naturally. So when I went to Florida State and majored in theater, and not musical theater, but theater, and then came to New York and just started going to auditions.
So would Ann Derflinger and a young Davis Gaines, when he's in pre-Disney Florida, where does the middle school child, where does he audition? Like, what was the theater reality back then?
There was
or
none.
Nearby?
There was none. It was only
where
my school.
Oh, at school.
I mean, to see theater, with the shows that came through town, there were touring shows back then, Broadway touring shows that came through. And at, you know, early age, mom and dad knew that I wanted to be an actor, and nothing else would do. So they, I don't know if they had been to New York at the time, but when I was 10, 8, 9, 10, they would take me and my sisters to come to New York.
How many kids in your family?
My twin sisters, three of us. So they knew I loved it so much. So they took us here when I was 10, and I saw my first Broadway show, Oliver.
And who was in it?
Oh, my God. It was, I think, Georgia Brown. Yeah.
Did you sing Who Will Buy in the car on your way home? You sang them all.
But I've since done the show, and I've done it several times. I did, when I was here early on, I was in the ensemble of a dinner theater show in Long Island, and the woman playing Nancy was Shani Wallace.
Of course.
Who was in the movie.
Of course.
And so I got to, like, as a like a kid loving
as
Oliver.
As long as he needs me.
Oh, my goodness. So I got to watch her do that every night. But, yeah, that's my life has been like that. Like, my first Broadway show was Camelot with Richard Burton. Like, I was 34th Spear Carrier from the left, but I got to know him and hang out with him and be his friend and watch him work every night.
Did he teach you anything?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
What did he teach you?
Like, storytelling. He was a great storyteller, and he thought I was as well. But he taught me the simplicity, the less is more.
Right.
Especially
economize
on stage. And he was just a wonderful man.
Because for me, when I would work with people that were older in television or film or in the theater, what people taught me in the theater was always a little bit more precise and useful. You know what I mean? Like, I'd have people come up to me, the first Broadway play I ever did was Loot, where we moved the Manhattan Theater Company production with Kevin Bacon. They moved the Joe Wharton play. David Merrick moved it to Broadway, and Kevin couldn't come, so I replaced him with Joe Mahar and Zoe Wanamaker and Charlie Keating and Jelka Wawanek and Nick Ullett and all these people that I remember like it was yesterday. And Charlie Keating was saying to me, "Oh, you come downstage, mate, with that screwdriver in the hand," and he says, "And hold it up when you say that line. I'm going to batten down the hatches now and hold up the screwdriver. I bet you get a laugh tonight. Give it a try." Bingo. Come downstairs, hold it up, I get a laugh. And I would get these tips from people who, they taught me how to do the business. You know what I mean? And Burton was one of those people for you?
Yeah. He gave me just simplicity. I mean, he was Richard Burton. So I just I just like a sponge, I just took it all in. And he was a friend and we hung out.
When did you become the star and how? When do you,
I hate that word, but...
so do I, but when did you become the lead actor in the piece, among the lead actors?
Well, I guess my first break in that way was Cornelius Hackle with Carol Channing. I think maybe that was a big step for me in my career to step out of the ensemble. And Richard Muenz, he played Lancelot in that production, and Christine Ebersole was Guinevere. And I remember sitting on the bus with him, and I wanted to be him. I wanted to be Lancelot. I wanted to play roles in shows. And I said, how do I do that? And he said, stop taking jobs. It's going to be easy for you to get a job in the chorus and you'll get pegged that way. And so just, you might not work for a while, but, you know, just hang in there.
Wait.
And sure enough, I got a call to audition for Jerry Herman, Carol Channing in Jerry's penthouse on the east side, and walked in saying, "It only takes a moment," and got the job. And then Carol and
never
I remained friends ever since till she died this year. And I just sang at her memorial service in Palm Springs. And so that opened the doors. That started me on a different path of playing roles. And then I had done a couple of things at Paper Mill Playhouse. So Angelo Del Rossi was the producer over there at the time. And he called and said, "We're going to do a production of Damn Yankees. And I want you to come in and audition." I said, "Oh, great. It's fantastic. I'll look at the music. And oh, by the way, George Abbott is directing it." And I went, Mr. Abbott? I said, "Oh, my God." So I was just like, I learned all the Joe Hardy music. And I walked into the Minskoff Rehearsal Studios, and it was just Mr. Abbott. He was 99 at the time. And Angelo Del Rossi. And I walked up and shook his hand, and I said, "Mr. Abbott, what an honor it is to meet you and be able to audition in front of you. And what would you like me to sing?" And he goes, "Well, you look like a baseball player." And I said, "Thanks. Thanks so much. Appreciate that." He goes, "Can you swing a bat?" And I said, "Yeah, of course.
You bet I can.
Right? I can do that." He goes, "Well, the guy we got for the movie, I forget his name." And I said, "Tab Hunter?" And he goes, "Yeah. Well, he couldn't swing a bat." I said, "Oh, but I can do it. What would you like me to sing?" And then he, long pause, and he looked at Angelo and he says, "Well, if Angelo says you can sing, that's good enough for me. I'll see you first day of rehearsals." So I got to play Joe Hardy, directed by George Abbott. Orson Bean was the devil. It was supposed to come to Broadway, but that's the story of my life. But then from that chance meeting, he was 99, and that next year he turned 100. So there's huge celebrations for him on Broadway. And who put them together and directed them was Hal Prince. So from Mr. Abbott, that's how I met
Hal. He passes on to Hal Prince.
Yes.
George Abbott. We're going to talk about who George Abbott is for the people in the audience who don't remember.
My goodness.
Tell us who George Abbott is.
I mean, he's like, before Hal Prince, there was George Abbott. Right. And he was an actor to begin with and a playwright and producer, director. He wrote so many things and directed so many things. Pajama Game, Damn Yankees, he wrote them and directed them and the movies. And when Hal got out of the service, he came to Mr. Abbott, and they shared an office up until Mr. Abbott died at 107. And
he was the godfather.
He really was. He was the beginning. There's a joke that he always said that somebody asked him what was the biggest change that he's seen in his lifetime on Broadway. And long pause again. Electricity. So that was Mr. Abbott with a great sense of humor. And so by chance, then I met Hal, and then Hal took me under his wing. And when Hal called and said, would you come audition for The Phantom? And I said, sure. So I had
Where were they at in the run of The Phantom by that point?
This was like maybe 3 years into the Broadway run, probably. But I remember auditioning first on the stage of the Majestic again, and then it was down to two people, apparently, and they flew me to Toronto because he was putting the Canadian company together. And they flew me there and put me up. The driver dropped me off, and he said, oh, I just dropped someone else off here earlier. I went, oh, there's somebody else auditioning as well. So they kept us totally separate, and then I guess he went first, and I went second, and then Hal comes on stage and said, do you want to go to L.A. and be the Phantom? And I went, sure.
When you look at these roles where people, I think, I'd love to get your take on this, mistakenly think, you just come out and you just blow those notes and you're saying, where's the acting involved? And in the rehearsals, what was the discussion about acting the Phantom?
That's a big pet peeve of mine. Like people, like after doing the Phantom for 6 years, I would tell people what I did or whatever, and they go, oh, so do you also act? And I went, that's what I do.
I'm going to chop you up in the
that's
the
what
canal.
I do. But to me, I can't separate the two.
When you were directed by people, how much were they do when you, if you were to your
well,
recollection?
For instance, George Abbott, he wrote the script. So he was very old school in the way he would give us line readings. You know, this, say it just
do
like
this. Yeah.
And I go, really? But then I did it. And then sure enough, after we opened, he was right.
He was on to something.
He was right. But then Hal would say to me, you know, oh, I've never seen it that way before, or done that before. I've never seen that before, but I like it. Keep it in. So he didn't want me to be like Michael Crawford or whoever else had played at that point. He was just open to my ideas and my interpretation, which was a credit to him and how he cast. So
you didn't feel you had some pressure as a put-in. They didn't say to you, Michael did this.
No,
they were open to your interpretation.
Yeah.
How do you think you were different from him?
I only saw him do it once, but I thought I was really pretty bad when the first year. I went into it pretty young, and I played him too.
You pushed.
Like a madman, and like right. He's all over the place. And then after 6 years and 2,000 performances, I would do just the slightest.
You did a tenth of what you did.
The slightest bit of the head or the hand, and it just makes all the difference.
There.
It's there. It's like part of me.
2,000 performances.
Yeah, I did that.
When you do a show 2,000 times, what's the key for the long-distance runner like you in that? Is it husbanding your voice and you take care of your voice and you're very cautious?
Well, I was a monk, and I listened to your podcast with Julie Andrews, and when she said, I think she was talking about, I don't know about herself, but it was, I had no life for 6 years, basically. That was my life, and I couldn't drink. I couldn't go out. I just went home and slept and drank water and came back. And because I felt a huge responsibility to the people that were buying tickets to be it on my best game.
Castmates.
On my best game. And yeah, and I that was my life. She also said, Julie Andrews, on your thing, that you ask her about doing the same role over and over again.
Right.
And I just figured out things that no acting class could teach me, or it was just I would have hit a plateau for like 2 years in, like that was my personal best, and then a year later, no, that was my personal best. So I kept challenging myself and trying to get better and trying to tell the story more clearly and more economically. And
you did it in L.A. for how long?
I did 2.5 years at the Amundsen, and then I bought a house in Hollywood Hills, and I just thought, I'm going to start my TV and film career, and you know,
and
Hal called and said, would you
you poor thing,
would you open the show for us in San Francisco? I said, oh sure. Like, so I did it 4 months up there. I was on my way back to L.A. literally, and starting my film
TV movie career.
Then Cal called again. He goes, you know what? It's not right. I think you should come back to New York and show everybody what you've been doing for 3 years. And so I said, okay. So 2.5 years at the Majestic.
And so when you left L.A., and I'm sure it was a very comfortable life for you, and you went back to New York, what was that like?
Tough? It was fantastic. It was a dream come true. Like, I was playing the freaking Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. It's like, it's not, you know.
It's a good perspective.
Yeah, it was like, how lucky
it was
can
an opportunity.
How lucky can one person get?
When Phantom is going to end in New York, whose decision is that? What happens?
For me, it was, once again,
yeah.
I was home and Hal called.
Hal's your travel agent, for Christ's sake.
Lee. He goes, Davis, Andrew and I are doing a new show. And together. It's the first one since we did Phantom. And we want you to be in it. And I went, well, could I sing something for you? He goes, is there anything you can't sing? And I said, well, probably, yeah. No, just stay put in Phantom. We'll pull you out when the time comes. And that's how it happened. It was called Whistle Down the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Hal called and said, time to come. So I left the show. So it was going to be a new show, Hal Prince, Andrew Lloyd Webber, playing the lead, to originate a role on Broadway. Everything was great. And we got to Washington, D.C. and opened, and the reviews were...
The magic didn't happen.
No. And we got okay reviews, but Hal and Andrew didn't. And like the next day, Hal went to Spain and Andrew back to England and left us there. And
yeah, they weren't used to that.
I mean, our marquee was up at the St. James. We were coming in, and then the last night they came on stage and told us that it was...
We're not going
anywhere.
And
the stage hands goes, where do you want your trunk to go? I said, I guess back to L.A. So that was my one chance to come back.
So they pull you from Phantom.
And then I didn't have
Washington.
A job.
It was Washington?
Washington, D.C., yeah.
And then you went to L.A.
Yeah. Then, you know, I went back. I didn't have a job anymore. But then I think I did Phantom one more time in Los Angeles.
For how long?
At the Pantages, just like six months or so, yeah. But yeah, whatever Hal said, you do.
I'm at some show, I want to say it's like a benefit for the Roundabout or something, back in the 90s, maybe the late 90s, I think. And McIntosh is there at a table, and he says, Mr. Baldwin, and he's very gleaming and very shiny, and he says, Mr. Baldwin, I'd like very much for you to come and meet with my staff and I, and we'd talk to you about doing a play, a musical. And I said, I don't sing. He said, nonsense, Mr. Baldwin. He said, anyone can sing. And he said, this is a part that was made for you. You were born to play this part. And he said, we're going to do The Witches of Eastwick. Ooh. And I want you to assay the role played by Jack Nicholson in the film, the lead male role. And I said, well, God, that sounds phenomenal. And you, I'm in such a boundless admirer of you. But I said, you don't want me to do this. You don't want me to do this. I said, Mr. Baldwin, nonsense. I want you to meet with my New York-based music director, John Clark. And he will take you through some tunes, and he will take you. So we go to his apartment on the Upper West Side, this old building, and we go in, and he's got the piano, and we're singing. Just say that word, and I'll beat your bird down to Acapulco Bay. I'm doing all my Sinatra ripoffs. I'm doing impersonations, and I can't sing. Finally, we get to like the third song, you know, John Larrabee or whatever his name was, and he stops the piano in the middle of the song. We're literally in the middle of the song. He stops. He goes, Mr. Baldwin, I believe you're right.
Oh my God.
He says, you really, really can't sing. You're listening to my conversation with the actor Davis Gaines. If you're a Broadway fan, here's a quiz. Gaines is to The Phantom as Audra McDonald is to... Well, maybe it's a trick question. You could say Porgy or Billie Holiday, but to me, the answer is Carrie Pipridge, the spunky mill worker with the best songs in Carousel. It was her breakthrough role. Performed in the shadow of her alma mater, Juilliard, where she had once felt so hopeless that she tried to take her own life.
To then open in Carousel at Lincoln Center, where you can look up and I can see the school that I had a hard time in. And I remember standing in those windows, seeing Patti LuPone performing there and going, why am I not doing that? And then...
How'd you feel?
Like the luckiest survivor in the world.
You can find the rest of that conversation with Audra McDonald if you text Audra, that's A-U-D-R-A, to the number 70101. I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Davis Gaines is remarkably unassuming for a Broadway leading man, but he nonetheless has got friends in high places. The entire Bush family, for one, starting with the late President George H.W. Bush.
I sang in Orlando for a cancer center gala benefit, and H.W. was the speaker. I had met him during the Whistle Down the Wind time in Washington, had a picture, but he doesn't remember, but I did. And so then after the show, he came up and said, "Barbara, we really like you." And I went, "Thanks." And like, "Yeah, her birthday's coming up and I'm going to get my boys and we're going to do something, but what's your email?" So I gave him my email address. 2 weeks later, he wrote and said, "Would I come and sing for Barbara Bush's 75th surprise birthday party in Kennebunkport?" I said, "Yes, yes. Yeah, I cannot pass this up."
Of course.
So it was an amazing experience. Barbara Bush ran that family, and she was the boss, and she had a mouth like a sailor. She was an amazing lady. I loved her. But they just took me in, and H.W. said, "What are you doing tomorrow? It's Sunday." I said, "I'm going back to New York." He goes, "Well, come by the house for coffee and donuts." I said, "Okay." So I walk in. There's no servants, no Secret Service, really. You park and went in the house, and there was Henry Kissinger going, "Good job last night, Davis. Good job." I was like, "Thank you, General. Thank you so much." And then H.W. goes, "There's coffee in the kitchen. Go help yourself." And blah, blah. So I was in the dining room hanging out, and George W. walked in.
W.
walked in. And I said, "Good morning, Governor. How you doing? How you doing?" He's like, feeling fine. I ran for a couple hours after church, feeling good. I said, "Good for you." And he goes, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Can you learn how to sing, or is it something you're born with?" And I said, "Good question. I think one can learn to sing, but you probably have to have some musicality in your head, maybe." Long pause again. And he goes, "Well, I don't know shit about singing, but you probably got the best voice in America." I said, "Well, thank you so much." And then I looked around. All the out-of-town guests were gone but me and the Bushes. And I said, "Oh, my God, just me and him now. I better get going." And he goes, No. Stay for lunch." And I said, I really overstayed my welcome. Look, there's Mama is putting out lunch stuff, and I got to go. He goes, No. If you're going to pick a day to eat here, this is the day, because we're having tacos." And I went, "Oh, wow. I love
Texas
me some,
people.
I love me some tacos." I said, "You better go ask your mom if I can stay." He goes, "You're right. Wait right here." So he went in the kitchen to ask Barbara Bush if I could stay for lunch. Comes out and goes, "You're in." So I was his little buddy all day long, and pinching myself under the
Why
table.
Me?
Why me?
Why me?
Why me? Pinching myself. Like, I'm oh, nice. Thanks.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't, yeah.
Do you so know when you go out there every night the effect you have on people?
No, but you know.
Don't.
No, but sometimes, I mean, that's the goal, is to move people or, you know, or like in Phantom, like if I didn't feel like I had a, if I wasn't my best that night, there was a huge, long, embarrassing bow that we had to do, like, stage left, stage right, in the middle. Like I said, short bow, because I didn't think I didn't deserve that, all that. So yeah, I go out there trying to do my best, and it's nice when people laugh or cry. Yeah, it's nice to do that, to feel that. I love that.
The show, you go back 6 months at the Amos, and then what happens?
Then I just settled back in L.A. and. So
a lot of concerts.
Yeah, I do a lot of concert work.
Do a lot of concerts. Do you enjoy that?
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, obviously it pays the bills and people want to come see you.
Very much so.
Because you get to do anything,
well,
correct?
I get to do what I want to do. But what's great about that is, like, I get to sing. I can sing "It Only Takes a Moment" as that character, as Cornelius. I can do Fagin. I can sing Reviewing the Situation as Fagin. I can go
acting
Impossible,
in the show as well.
Impossible Dream. And every song has it. I become a character, mm-hmm. which... That's what I love to do. And so I morph into that. And then I can just sing, you know, normal standards.
But what are some standards that you, what are some of your favorite standards?
I did an album, Sammy Kahn tunes, because I sang at his memorial service.
I wonder if that's the go-to.
Yeah,
I wonder if these guys are dying and they're saying, you know, "I love you, Irene. And one more thing. Yes, Sammy. You got to get Davis Gaines to sing at my memorial."
You know who Michael Childers is, the photographer?
Yes.
He called me the other day to come sing at a funeral of someone I didn't know. But I said, "Sure." And then I was sitting next to him. He goes, "You know you're singing at my funeral." I went, "No, I didn't know that, Michael." He said, "You know, you sang at John Schlesinger's funeral." I went,
"You're too kind." How did the film and TV thing go over the arc of many years?
Well, I did a lot during the when I was Phantom. They wanted me as a guest star on Veronica's Closet with Kirstie Alley, and I did it. Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury, and those guest things, Charmed, and all those But since then, I have no representation in Los Angeles, so I don't go out on anything.
You don't want to?
Yeah, I do, but I don't have an agent. So that stuff has kind of fallen off. I don't really have anybody to book me in concerts and clubs or music anymore. So people just come to me and say, "Will I sing?" I definitely want to, but I'm really good when I'm working. When I'm not working, I'm not so good. And, you know, as a person, and as I'm
what
good.
Do you mean?
You know, I just get
when
like,
you're not working,
I'm
so good as a person.
Antsy. I get antsy, depressed, and when I'm on
you
stage,
do.
When I'm on stage, I'm like.
What's the longest you went where you didn't work?
Oh gosh.
Months?
6 months, year.
6 months. A year?
Maybe.
So let's say we'll split the difference as 9 months. Maybe we'll say a year. And without getting into too much detail, I don't want to pry, but when you say you get antsy, what does that
well,
feel like?
I don't feel like I'm worth
what
well,
do you do? What do you
I'm
do?
I'm going to tell you this interesting story. I probably wanted to quit many times the business. Like, I don't know what else to do. But I would rather, I mean, there's part of me wants to just have a normal job, like a normal person. But on The Phantom, like as it happened on in The Majestic, I was probably, you know, five and a half years into the run. And for whatever reason, it just hit me. I was at the organ. We just came in and Phantom was going at the organ in the beginning of the show. And I just burst out into tears, like me, not The Phantom.
Yeah.
I had to use it. And I just realized that at that moment, like I only felt worth anything or loved between 8 o'clock and 10:30 every day. It's like, I went, and I loved what I did and I just loved it. But I realized that there's gotta be more to life than Phantom or
between
a job.
Cut, as we say in the TV business
yeah.
and film business.
Yeah. So I just like knew that I just had this thing like that I only felt worth anything in those hours that I was there.
Did you have to work on that?
I went to therapy the next day. Probably the next day I found a great therapist here. But I realized, yeah, and it's always a balance now just to, you know, be happy doing, not working, but when I appreciate when I get on stage even more now because I've just, it's like home. It's like,
and don't let it define
like church,
you.
It's like church to me.
Exactly. Don't let it define you in the way that it's going to cripple you.
Yeah.
You know, when I did this Joe Wharton play, I did another Joe Wharton play after we did Loot in 86. I did Entertaining Mr. Sloan in 2004. And I'll never forget when I had the scenes with the young guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Ed, the middle-aged brother. My sister lives in a house with my father. And then this male hustler shows up and I'm this bisexual man who's in love with, and Chris Carmack. And I remember the moment when I was alone with Chris on stage for some of the funniest parts of the play. I remember saying to myself, oh my God, I never want this to end because I don't have as much fun anywhere else.
Right.
And this is before I met my wife and my kids. This is 2004. I met my wife in 2011. So 7 years prior, in the thick of my divorce and my life was hell and custody battles for my daughter and just everything outside the doors of the theater was shit. And I'd walk into that theater and I thought, I know exactly what I'm going to say for the next 2.5 hours. I know exactly what you're going to say. I know exactly how they're going to react.
And people will love you.
And it was fun.
Yeah.
I never had more fun in my life.
It's like that line from Applause. I'm only alive at night when I'm in a show. It's like, that's what I got to do. That's what I do.
Now, would you do shows now?
Yeah,
and
all the
concerts?
Time.
Where?
I mean, I do most of my stuff in LA, but I've got the thing about living there, like the last 10 years, I got to play roles that I never would have played here.
What's the last one you did?
I just played Nostradamus in Something Rotten, and then Fagin and Oliver and Music Man and Silence the Musical. I've Hannibal Lecter. It's the nastiest, but the greatest thing
they did
ever.
Silence of the Lambs as a musical?
Oh, gosh, dude.
And you played Lecter?
Yeah, you could probably.
And Fava Beans and everything.
Oh, I can't even tell you the song. My first song, it's like, can't even speak it on the. My parents were so great about coming to everything I ever did, and that's the only show that
the first song that you can't say on I Can Smell Your Blank?
I
knew it!
If I could smell her blank.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've seen that a few times. It's huge. Oh, God, when is that? You've done the gamut,
cool,
haven't you?
Some really fun. I just did a play with Rita Rudner, a comedy, just the two of us kind of. So, yeah, I love doing all different kinds. I don't have to sing, but I can, but I don't have to. But it's fun to do all those different things.
And what I'm wondering, are there songwriters and are there individual songs, can you name a couple, that you never tire of singing?
Gosh. There's a song, Sammy Kahn, the words that he wrote, and he won 4 Oscars in 20 Oscar nominations. All that music that he wrote, his words are amazing to me. There's his one of his favorite songs that my favorite song that he wrote was from a Broadway show called Skyscraper, and it's called I'll Only Miss Her When I Think of Her. And it's like just a simple poem. Just I never tire of singing something like that. Songs that are sad, songs that hit the heart, and like listening to, like, when John Raitt was old, in his 80s, and I was doing Phantom in L.A., we did concerts together, me and John Raitt. And it was my, we would sing If I Loved You together as a duet, or Hey There from Pajama Game, and I would watch him sing Soliloquy, and then he watched me sing Music of the Night, and it was like a dream come true. Like, why me? And be able to, like, having Rosemary Clooney come backstage in L.A. after Phantom and said, I can listen to you sing all day. I said, no, Rosemary Clooney. And she gave me your home phone number. Call me. It's like, I just don't, it amazes me. And I'll bring this full circle back to Carol Channing's memorial the other day. I was in the wings in rehearsal soundcheck with Tyne Daly. And we were talking about how lucky we are to be there.
Keep working.
And
be in Carol's.
And be there. And keep working.
In front of Carol's family.
How much, and she goes, yeah, I felt so great about being in the golden end of television with Cagney and Lacey. And then I've been Gypsy on Broadway. And I said, yeah, I just feel the same way. Like, I don't know why me. And why did I get to work with George Abbott and Hal Prince and Carol Channing and Richard Burton? And I just don't sometimes can't process it. Like, I loved it. It was a dream, but I don't know why me. And she just put her hand on my chest and goes, why not you? And I went, whew. It was like a light bulb moment for me. Like, wow, why not me? And I've told that to people since then. And it's like, if I only knew that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, why not me? It would have given me that thing. But now this week, just I'm here talking to you, and why not me? And I'm so grateful, and I can't wait. I just...
You know what I want to say as we go out of this show?
Okay.
Sometimes it all wraps itself up perfectly.
Does it?
Wait, well, I'll tell you why. Because we're going to play some music as we go out here.
Okay.
And when I play this music, everyone will know what I know, which is when you say, why me? This is why. The music we're going to play right now,
okay.
This is why. Because you are literally one of the greatest singers ever in show business.
I love you, man. Thank you so much.
Love you too, Davis Gaines.
All that you say, that you feel about me, is how I feel about you. While you were seeking the one man you love, I sought one girl, one all my own.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and Here's the Thing is a production of WNYC Studios.